Let's log on to the internet, shall we? What's Trending is brought to you by Geico. You got a choice of ways that you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online at geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number five.
So Ole Miss was the last at-large team selected for the College World Series, the NCAA tournament, if you will.
Okay.
NC State was the first team left out.
Oh.
Here's what Ole Miss went on to do.
Oh.
They went on to win the College World Series. They knocked off Oklahoma and Omaha. They win the final series 2-0, Joe, to give the Rebels and the SEC the champions of baseball. This, a year after Mississippi State won the national title. You'll recall the Bulldogs beat another SEC team, Vanderbilt, which was placed into the final after NC State was kicked out of Omaha at 2 o'clock in the morning.
NC State doesn't play any teams from Mississippi this upcoming football season, do they?
They don't.
Okay, good.
They don't.
Good, because if they
That was last year.
If they did, then I would actually position Mississippi State or Ole Miss as your future SEC champions. Or actually, they would, like, I don't know, find a way into the College World Series. Here, there's two things that are going on here. Yes, there's a little bit of a law of the wolf at play with the fact that Ole Miss, the team that got in the NCAA tournament over NC State as the last team in, went all the way.
Yeah. Okay. And now, specifically, I was told when NC State was left out mm-hmm. that Ole Miss was the team in because they're from the SEC, and the AD at Mississippi State, who was the head of the selection committee, mm-hmm. wanted to make sure that the SEC had more teams in than the ACC.
Which we'll get to that in a second, because I kind of see the future after this College World Series.
And again, I don't think that's nefarious. I think the AD for Mississippi State was looking out for the SEC,
which is
how these committees work.
It's what you do. I don't blame. No, I'm not blaming the SEC for doing these types of things. I would expect the same thing out of the ACC. Ole Miss winning it has that weird law of the wolf connection, but Ole Miss winning it is yet more proof that when it comes to college baseball, people talk about a crapshoot. This one, the March Madness is March Madness for a reason, and we've got some incredible stories that have come through it. Understand. But there's a method to it, right? Team gets hot.
Sure. All those guard play.
Guard play. All right, here we go, right?
Hall of Fame coach.
With baseball and the series nature of it and the depleted nature of college pitching, dude, it's anybody's guess as to how you're going to go. It's one thing that happens in every College World Series or every NCAA tournament. You have to steal one from time to time, much like NC State did last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what Ole Miss did, right? They could steal one, right?
You can get a pitcher who has one outstanding game at a time when you really don't expect it,
mm-hmm.
and that can go a long way.
So that's what worked in Ole Miss's favor, and we're talking about a team that was terrible in April, started out SEC conference play with I think they lost their first four series
mm-hmm.
in SEC conference play. I did not realize this. They had essentially benched their entire pitching staff and started going to, like, untested guys because they needed something. They needed a spark. Here they are winning it all. Now, about the SEC, Aaron Fitt, D1 Baseball, joined us earlier today about the future of the NCAA Baseball Tournament and the College World Series. When you looked at the makeup of this College World Series with current SEC teams and future SEC teams in Texas and Oklahoma, and all the money that is coming into the SEC and why this matters, especially in the world of baseball, why this is going to be the norm, Aaron was very much on board with this future.
Yeah, I think it's clear at this point the SEC is driving the boat in college baseball just like they are in football. I mean, you think about this, guys. In 2010, the start of the 2010 season, there were only two SEC programs that had ever won the national championship in baseball. It was LSU a bunch of times and then the 90s mostly, and then it was Georgia like in 1989 or 90. And that was it. And you know, since then we've had South Carolina win it twice, Vanderbilt win it twice, Florida's won it, Mississippi State, Ole Miss. Like, the power has shifted so dramatically toward the SEC. I don't know how anyone else can stop their momentum. You know, and they're only going to get stronger when you add Texas and Oklahoma to the mix. And we're headed toward a place where it's just, you know, the power, whatever, four conferences in baseball. They're going to wind up just monopolizing the sport even more than they already do. And they're going to control the direction, you know, with the transformation stuff that's coming, the scholarship restrictions. I think the 11.7 We're going to see the end of that pretty darn soon. And once that happens, we forget it. You know, I had to keep up with those teams because they have the resources and they actually use the resources in baseball. They want to spend money on baseball, unlike the Big Ten, you know, which has all kinds of money, but they're never going to invest in baseball because they don't have a chance. It's just, it's a warm weather game that starts in mid-February. But the SEC, they've got the commitment from all of the athletic programs. They got the huge fan bases. They got the best facilities. And, of course, that's where most of the top players want to play. They're on TV all the time.
Yeah.
It's just they got everything going for them.
That's Aaron Fitt, D1 Baseball, who joined us earlier today on the OG. If you want to catch that full conversation, check it out on the Best of the OG podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Next up.
If you have something to say about tonight's discussion, follow me on Twitter at WRALena. Have a great night.
Remember, Rand's got some workaround for number four.
Oh, that's right.
So we get Lena instead.
Why wasn't I informed of this?
Wait a minute.
Number four.
Hold on. Hit the button again. What does it do?
If you have something to say about tonight's discussion, follow me on Twitter at WRALena. Have a great night.
Love Lena. Lena's my people.
I just want to know where that music came from.
It clearly came from a WRAL news broadcast.
I feel like I'm reading Rainbow or something.
That's very strange. I don't know. Do we cross wires with Mix 101.5 when they simulcast the evening news?
This is one of those
mysteries of the computer.
This is one of those Rand mysteries. He's got a workaround for it.
Hold on a second. Number four. Today in Kyrie Irving, Adrian Wojnarowski at ESPN.com has this story. It starts, outside of the Los Angeles Lakers, there are currently no known teams planning to pursue a sign-and-trade deal for Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie Irving. He needs a trade partner to coordinate an agreement on a deal to get a long-term maximum contract, but only the Lakers have interest in executing said sign-and-trade once free agency opens up on Thursday night. Kyrie Irving was at the BET Awards yesterday, and there was a clip of him making the rounds when somebody had asked him, like, hey, man, what's up with you and the Nets? He's like, I'm not answering that question. Oh, so it went from, I've always wanted to be a Brooklyn Net, I want to stick around here, to, I'm going to leave it open-ended because the dude loves the attention. This leaves the Nets in a complete dumpster fire. Here is Adrian Wojnarowski earlier today. I'm sorry, Brian Windhorst earlier today on ESPN explaining that the Nets are preparing for the worst.
The Nets saying, the Nets are putting out there right now that they are prepared to lose both Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. They would rather lose them both than go through what they went through last season, which was a miserable season under the situation that Kyrie Irving contributed to creating.
Think about that. Think about what Brian Windhorst just said. The Brooklyn Nets have one of the best NBA players on the planet in Kevin Durant. And yes, age and injury might have taken some out of Kevin Durant, but I'd still rather have him on my team than not. But because Kyrie Irving is so toxic, my Kings, he is so toxic, they'd rather leave the team in the hands of Ben Simmons? I'm understanding this correctly. That we'd rather have our franchise run through a guy who refuses to shoot. Okay. What are you going to surround Ben Simmons with at this point to make him like, I don't get it. I really don't get it. But that's how bad Kyrie Irving is. And just for the hilarity of it all, I would love for LeBron James and Kyrie Irving to get back together and see how that plays out after what happened in Cleveland. Or could this be a long troll by LeBron James? Oh, I got you here to the Lakers, but guess what? I'm going back to Cleveland, because that's been a rumor as well.
Listen, if I asked you how old Kyrie Irving was and you couldn't look it up on the Google machine, what would your guess be?
Well, I would immediately go back to 2010 at Duke.
Okay.
And then I would do the math from there and say he's like 30 years old, 30, 31.
He's 30. He just turned 30 in March. He's been in the NBA 11 years. I would have guessed 34.
Well,
just seems so much older. He never plays. Okay, let's go through his career. He's never played 82 games.
No.
Now you have Matt. He hasn't played more than 50 games.
You know why it
feels
longer?
Since 2019.
You know why it feels longer?
Because
everything around Kyrie Irving is exhausting.
Right.
That's why it feels longer.
But I guess this is leading me to my next point. He's never played in his career. He's never played more than 75 games. That's when he was 22 years old.
Yeah.
Since then, the most he's played is 72 games. Last year, 29. Year before, 54. Year before, 20. Like, who in the world is going to give Kyrie Irving a long-term contract? Not even the Lakers are going to give him a long, unless they can dump Westbrook's contract, which I guess would have to be the play there. But it's like, Kyrie, you have a player option for $44 million. I would take that, mm-hmm. and I would play the one final year together with Kevin Durant and see if you guys can't win the thing with Simmons. That's someone, maybe it's Carl Lentz, the pastor to the stars, who got him out of Cleveland to begin with his cockamamie advice to leave LeBron to begin with. Now, your best move is to stay in Brooklyn, take your player option, make your $44 million, and make a run at the title and convince Ben Simmons to get on the floor with you. That's your best move. Don't go running around and doing all this other nonsense. Everyone else already thinks you're a whack job to begin with. Prove everybody wrong.
Next up.
Number three.
All right, Joe, I know you're on the edge of your seat because last week the LIV Tour put out almost looked like a periodic table of the elements, the element table, right?
Yeah, because it had like teams and
whatnot,
right?
They had teams, they had players, and they said, coming soon, two new players for the event in Pumpkin Ridge.
Sure.
In Portland. Well, Joe, those players were announced today. Matthew Wolf and Carlos Ortiz are going to be your new golfers on the LIV Golf.
Wait, who was the second guy?
Carlos Ortiz.
I've heard of
Mexican.
The Wolf.
The Wolf is an interesting one.
Wait, are you saying LIV Golf called the Wolf?
You call him the Wolf?
Okay.
That's all you had to say.
That's all LIV Golf had to say.
You know, I've been hung up on Taylor Gooch leaving the PGA Tour for LIV Golf. Matthew Wolf is going to be another one of those players who, how are you going to get into majors, young man? You're 23 years old. His current ranking is 74 in the world golf rankings. This year, Joe, he began at 30. Do you know how world golf rankings work? They work year over year.
Yeah.
He has no chance of being in the top 50. So if you're not in the top 50 and you're not a major champion, which he's not, how are you going to play in the majors? And what do you care about at 23 years old?
Money.
Wow.
Money, baby.
Wow.
Next up,
head scratcher.
Number two.
Saw the tweet earlier today that the Hockey Hall.
Shouldn't that one have been Deborah Morgan?
No.
If number four is Lena.
No.
Get Renee Chu at number one. We need to do that now.
Actually, what we need to do is to get them all to say number five, number four. We'll work on that this summer. So the Hockey Hall of Fame, I saw the tweet earlier today that the Hockey Hall of Fame was going to announce their class at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and I was preparing myself for Rod Brind'Amour not being in this year's class because it really comes down to a simple thing for me. Rod Brind'Amour is not in the Hockey Hall of Fame because he didn't play for a Canadian team at any point. He played for the Philadelphia Flyers and he played for the Carolina Hurricanes. If Rod Brind'Amour played for the Toronto Maple Leafs and then followed that up with the Senators or some Vancouver, Calgary, I don't care. Name me a Canadian team. And he put up the same numbers, the same resume.
You mean like Doug Gilmour, who was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011?
Yeah.
450 goals, 14 career points. Let's check that against Rod Brind'Amour. 450 goals. Okay, 1,184 career points.
Mm-hmm.
Let's check a few stops here for Doug Gilmour, who was a teammate of Rod Brind'Amour in St. Louis, it looks like. Oh, Calgary. Oh, Toronto. Oh, that's so weird.
Weird, right?
How did he end up there? And Rod, they have the same, pretty much the same resume, except, well, of course, you know, Rod Brind'Amour. Stanley Cup champion 06.
Yeah,
led.
Other than that,
Hurricanes also in 02.
So when I saw that they were going to announce the class today, I was preparing myself for him not being inducted because he should be in already, and it's not going to happen because of the reasons that we just laid out. But here it is, 3 o'clock. Here's the announcement: Daniel Alfredsson of the Ottawa Senators. Canadian team. Alfredsson and Rod Brind'Amour essentially have the same resume with the exception of, one guy's got a cup and the other doesn't. And what's this? Daniel and Henrik Sedin? Vancouver! The Twins! Look, I don't want to put Daniel Sedin on blast, but when you actually start looking at the numbers between these players, Rod Brind'Amour and Daniel Sedin, you come to find out, I'm sorry, not Daniel, Henrik. See, I did it. The brothers, I'm getting the brothers confused, which is why these two are going in the Hall of Fame together anyway. I bet you the voters are like, whichever one, but put both of them in. I don't know which one's which. So when you look up Rod Brind'Amour and Henrik Sedin, Brendan Moore has 150 more games played, 212 more goals, 114 more points, and one more Stanley Cup, for heaven's sake. So this is, I understand where people might get upset that we boil this down to a real simple thing, but the reason why we boiled it down to the simple thing is because there's really no other explanation. Rod Brendan Moore didn't play for a Canadian team. Rod Brendan Moore, even though he is Canadian, has the cardinal sin against him for not playing that. Now, you can also get into the dynamics of the Hockey Hall of Fame, and there's two members of the Hockey Hall of Fame that Rod Brendan Moore might not necessarily have a decent relationship, but that would be me speculating, and I don't know. But when you see Ron Francis and you see Bobby Clark, maybe you're wondering, hey, maybe there's a little something there. And if you can't get in with those two guys on the board, well, then what's going on, right? What's going on? I'm very confused when it comes to Rod Brendan Moore and the Hockey Hall of Fame. But if we know anything about Rod Brendan Moore, he doesn't really seem all that concerned with validating his career with the Hockey Hall of Fame. I don't get that vibe.
I think Rod is content with the work that he put in, knowing that he poured it out every last ounce that he had. All of the work in.
Doesn't that come through with the Stanley Cup?
It does. And I hope it's a separate vote. If he continues on the path that he's on, I think he'll be a Hall of Fame coach. But it's so unusual. Usually with Hall of Fames, Joe, you need an advocate, number one.
Yes.
Number two, you can't be the first, right? You can't be the unicorn. You need the comparison. I just gave you Doug Gilmore. Guy Carboneau is another one of a defensive forward who, you know, the thing about Rod to me that gets overlooked, and you had mentioned Philadelphia, he also was in St. Louis as a rookie. Rod was always better in the postseason. Always.
Yes.
And you can count his counting stats against him if you choose, his offensive counting stats against him if you choose. But in 159 playoff games, he had 51 goals. That's a 3-2-0 per game, right? You go to the Sedins, they had 25 goals in 100 games. I mean, what are we doing here? If the playoffs don't matter, then maybe I should applaud them because it's the opposite of the NBA, right? Like, hey, let's give Daniel Alfredson, and who also has very similar career stats.
Yeah, but I don't.
Like, hey, let's make sure we're rewarding the regular season and that President's Trophy you're really worried about.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it, because Vancouver was outstanding in the regular season. Ottawa, Alfredson was the captain of the team. And I hate that I'm positioning as, oh, Rod should be in over these guys. There's room, to your point about Halls of Fame, there's room.
There's room.
We don't need to sit here and act like you can't include somebody and you shouldn't be in over another person. But to act like Rod Brendan Moore didn't leave his mark because he wasn't the Conn Smythe Trophy winner in 06 is one of the dumbest things I've ever come across on these internets.
The best way I can process what goes on with Rod Brendan Moore is what happens outside of North Carolina and Virginia as it relates to ACC postseason award voting. Right? What do we always hear from outside of this area, especially when the Big East members joined? Ah, you're so Carolina-centric. Clemson's never going to get its proper due. Florida State and Miami, they're afterthoughts. Because for the most part, the large voting blocks for ACC awards come from the state of North Carolina and Virginia. Very motivated media areas for college sports. So this is the inverse of that. Canada is North Carolina when it comes to ACC voting at this point. Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one. We're number one.
Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup last night, beating the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm not going to lie. When the Lightning went up 1-0 early in that game, I started to think, oh, man, are the Lightning really going to do this?
The zombie Lightning.
Are the Lightning with injuries and fatigue and all? I mean, think of all the extra seasons of hockey they have played in the postseason on their way to a third Stanley Cup. It's wild what these guys have had to do. When they went up 1-0 last night, I started to think to myself, wait a minute. Are they going to force a game 7? Are we at that point? Is Colorado, who's been dominant in the postseason, going to start looking in the mirror and going, what did we do? Oh, my goodness, we gave them a chance. But Colorado did what Colorado's done all throughout the postseason, and that's just take it to you. And they ended up winning last night. And Nathan MacKinnon, their best player, on winning the Stanley Cup.
It's hard to describe. I didn't really know what it'd be like to actually win it, but just seeing all these Warriors battle just feels unbelievable. So words can't describe how I feel right now.
Yeah, words. He's right. Words cannot describe what happens when you see a team win the Stanley Cup. And as the clock started to run out, you could get that anticipation being built. And then when the final horn sounded, they all rush out on the ice and there's pandemonium. There's guys hugging each other. It's just, it's great to see. There is no sport that has such a cathartic outpouring of emotion quite like when a team wins the Stanley Cup, which was interesting to hear from Steve Stamkos.
But first, Nathan MacKinnon actually had the quote of the night last night.
And that is?
And because he was talking about how the Lightning won the thing in back-to-back years and got back a third time. He said, it's crazy how they went back-to-back. I might get fat as blank right now, so I don't know if we're going back-to-back, but I know I'm going to enjoy it for sure.
Yes. Yeah, there is a little... he's right. There is an element of you win, you party too hard, and you struggle.
Ovechkin, right? Ovechkin's, I mean, that was the longest cup celebration ever.
It really was, and it was a hell of a ride.
And glorious for them.
It was amazing the entire time. But Steve Stamkos, who has been on the other side of this, they've won two in a row, describes what it's like to actually be on the losing side in this three-year run.
You know, there's probably a lot of teams that get to this position and feel like they had an unbelievable year. And for us, it's disappointing because we know what we have in there. And, we know that feeling that they're having over there right now. It's the best in the world. And, you know, sometimes you forget the other side of it. It was just a grind. I mean, it was... That's what makes it even tougher, because you realize how hard you work to get here. And disappointment is, you probably can't put it into words.
So that was Stamkos on the Lightning being bounced. I forgot exactly who it was. I saw this clip floating around, but essentially it was, oh, you know, this is an end of an era for the Lightning. Your window's closed, you know, three in a row. That's great, but, I mean, come on, four? And it's like, who says we won't be back here, right? Look, I give the Lightning credit for having that confidence, and that's exactly how they got here in the first place. But the best part about last night, with the celebration of the Colorado Avalanche winning the Stanley Cup, the best part about last night was when they were getting ready for the group photo, and everybody's all lined up, there's the on the ice, and they're bringing the Stanley Cup to the group. Somebody tripped and fell and dinged up the Stanley Cup. Just whoops. But then again, this is all part of what happens with the Stanley Cup. We all know that the players get their time with the Stanley Cup, and there are some epic parties. We actually talked to Howie Barrow. He's one of the members of the Hockey Hall of Fame. His job is to tag along with the Stanley Cup when it's either touring or when it's with a player for their particular day. Phil Pritchard is the guy you see most of the time, the one with the beautiful blonde locks. But we talked to Howie Barrow about his time with the Cup and, you know, some of the stranger things that he's seen. Maybe are we overhyping it?
I don't believe so. I don't think I've even asked him. I know enough that whatever happened in the past happened in the past.
Is there like a, you know, code?
I heard more
cup?
Stories from fans and other players that were there
okay. When
things happened. So crazy stuff for sure. You know, being thrown into a swimming pool or something where the cup is not supposed to be because the water is not good for the metal, whether it's salt water or chlorine. You know, little things like that. But, I mean, nowadays with smartphones, silly things like that can't happen. Players look after it. They know how hard it is to win it, so they respect it more. And with the touring, too, and the, you know, the initiation of bringing in a curfew, it's also for us because we have to travel. If we're up all night with the players and then have to take it to the next guy, we're not getting much rest. And, you know, it's probably unsafe to be driving when you're that tired and stuff and do it for a week or more at a time. So I think it helps everybody. I mean, in the end, players probably get it from about early morning, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning, and they have it till midnight. That's probably enough time to be able to do what you need to do during the day to celebrate with your family and friends and your community.
So that was Howie Barrow. He's part of the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's one of the keepers of the cup. There are actually three cups that you see, including the original one that's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Although part of the reason why things are a little bit more tame now is, Jillio, you like to blame the 94 Rangers for that.
Well, I don't like to. That's a fact.
Yeah, it's true. They went a little too hard in the paint. But when we talked to Howie, he had talked about how there have been newborn babies in the cup, and you kind of get on me about it. And maybe this has to do with the fact that you didn't get a – did you drink from the cup or no?
Mm-mm.
You didn't – yeah.
I didn't want to, though.
Why not? Because of the things that have happened to that cup?
See, yes. I don't view it that way. I view it like seasoning.
It's like a Weber grill, right? Like, what, do you think the burgers that I grilled up this past weekend were tasty because...
What do you think was in that cup when it was at the strip club in New York City? Like,
they cleaned it.
Okay.
Just saying.
Okay.
So I drank beer from the club. It's alcohol. Sanitized. It's all good.
Okay, that's fair. It's good. It does. It kills the germs.
Yeah. Kills germs.
Hey, brings up a good point.
Just saying. Speaking of points, with the Avalanche winning last night, should it give Canes fans hope that eventually they can break through the same way that the Avalanche have broken through? Because remember, Avalanche were in a similar situation before they absolutely put the hammer down this postseason. Good young core with a lot of expectations that had early exits or exits that were not fulfilling. And they broke through this season, and they went through the defending champs or the reigning champions in the Tampa Bay Lightning. You can look at the Carolina Hurricanes and tell a similar story. Like, you don't need lights-out goaltending. I get that. But here's the thing, Julio. You do need your best players to actually put the hammer down, too. And that's been my biggest problem with the Carolina Hurricanes discussion. It's not about goaltending. It's about the guys that you've invested in taking that next step. If you believe in Sebastian Aho, if you believe in Andrei Svechnikov, they're going to have to play better than they did against the Rangers, like you saw out of the Avalanche, where their best players, like MacKinnon, went on and did the thing consistently throughout. Can they do it? I'm hopeful, but I think that's an honest assessment of this postseason for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, they definitely should take hope. Regular season, Colorado 56 wins, Carolina 54. Regular season, Colorado 119 points, Canes 116. Goal differential, plus 78 for Colorado, plus 76 for the Canes. Then you look, now Colorado had higher draft picks because they reached a lower point than the Canes ever did. But when you look at the commensurate parts, Cale Makar, Jacob Slavin, they have their own Finn, Mika Rantanen, who, you know, was outstanding in the playoffs, to your point. And then MacKinnon was the number one overall pick. Svechnikov is the number two overall pick. Look, the teams aren't all that dissimilar. They're mm-hmm. more alike. They're certainly more alike in their DNA mm-hmm. if we go to the top. And Joe Sakic is really the architect of that team. I would argue that Rod Brind'Amour is truly the architect of the Canes team. So they should take away from this that they can do it. It can be done, particularly the style that the style that the Avalanche play, and you know that it doesn't. You don't have to have a superhuman in goal mm-hmm. in order to win.
We'll give you our hot and cold of the week, but I did want to pass along condolences to the Bulls, the Durham Bulls family, and Capital Broadcasting. Longtime broadcaster, he's an in-game host. I mean, for lack of a better term, he was like a good team ambassador. Ken Tanner passed away today, and you can probably find out more on the Durham Bulls website. But you could not find a nicer man in the ballpark. Ken loved the Bulls, loves baseball, loves sports. Listen to the show, would always say hey, always make time and everything else. And I know that the Bulls will do something to honor him at some point here, I'm sure. But I just saw that news earlier today. As Patrick Keenis, longtime play-by-play voice for the Bulls, said, "You know, nobody loved Bulls baseball more than Ken. Nobody. Ken was, as he put it, hashtag star of the game." Let's give you our hot and cold of the weekend. It's brought to you by Any Day Heating and Cooling. Weekend's in the books. Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend is in the books. We'll give you what we thought was the hot, what was the cold. Julio, what was your cold of the weekend?
Oh, my cold goes to... Now, we had talked previously on this program about the great Burmese python chase in Florida.
Yes.
That doesn't start for another month.
Yeah.
But the run-up to that, Joe, my cold goes to Dionysus. Poor Dionysus. Because what happened this past weekend in Florida... The longest and largest Burmese python has been captured.
Okay.
215 pounds, 18 feet long. And according to the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, it's the heaviest ever captured in the state of Florida. Now, this is how we get to poor Dionysus. Biologists found it's a female snake. Mm-hmm. They found the female by tracking a male scout snake named Dionysus with a radio transmitter. Males are attracted to the largest females. So by following a breeding male like Dionysus, mm-hmm. they can find and remove large breeding females and their eggs. Sounds like poor Dionysus did not get to get his reward from the largest snake ever captured.
My cold of the weekend goes to Kyrie Irving. Y'all, we don't, and not Kyrie specifically, the news around Kyrie. This is what he wants, folks. This is what he wants. So stop giving it to him. What was your hot of the weekend?
My hot of the weekend goes to an NIL story that is now developing, if you will.
Ah, yes.
According to 247 Sports, Jaden Rashada was supposed to have received $9.5 million from Miami bazillionaire John Ruiz as part of his commitment to the Hurricanes. Mm-hmm. According to the same report, Florida and their collective had actually offered Rashada, who's in the class of 23, the seventh-ranked quarterback in the class of 23, $11 million to go to Florida. Not so fast, says Jaden Rashada, Joe. Any report regarding my commitment to the University of Miami is false unless I was interviewed directly.
Oh.
All reports of my decision involving an NIL deal are inaccurate. I would never make a career choice for any monetary value. He's 17, by the way.
Oh, interesting. My hot of the weekend goes to Adam Gold. Adam Gold
Congrats.
Show. Noon to 3, the NSMA is taking place today. The awards banquet is actually happening today. This news was announced earlier in the year where Adam was named the Sports Broadcaster of the Year. Well-deserved in all the years that Adam has been here. But it's not lost on me that Adam finally won this award when he got rid of me. That's all it took. Had he known, had Adam known that like I was dragging his ass down, he could have won so many. Think of all the awards he could have won. But seriously, congrats to Adam. Overdue for Adam Gold, who I don't think gets enough credit for his contributions to sports talk in this market for over two decades.